Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today in The Exchange is U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan, a Democrat who served two terms as New Hampshire governor. She's just back from a tumultuous time on Capitol Hill, where a long campaign by Republicans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act went down. But while Democrats like Senator Hassan were relieved about that, there's another shoe waiting to drop here in New Hampshire. Fears of a huge hike in insurance premiums, with the state's insurance commissioner last week warning of a market failure. Today in The Exchange, we'll talk about that with Senator Hassan and much more. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Senator Hassan, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What's the next step, Senator Hassan, on health care? Now that the so-called skinny repeal has gone down, does everybody just fold their cards and go home or what?
Well, look, since becoming senator, I've been trying to work on the same things I focused on as governor, reaching across party lines to find a way to strengthen the middle class, support innovative businesses, and keep our country safe, secure, strong, and free. And certainly one of the things we have to focus on still and always is health care. We need to have a strong and productive population if we're going to be a strong and productive economy and country. And so Democrats have, for the last months, been asking Republicans to sit down with us and really talk about common ground in this healthcare debate. We think there is quite a bit because we know, first and foremost, to your point in your introduction, we have to stabilize the markets. We know that some of the Trump administration's actions have destabilized those markets. We know there are improvements we need to make on the Affordable Care Act. And so we've put forward proposals to create a reinsurance market for high-risk cases. Senator Shaheen has led the way in trying to put into law that the administration will pay these things called cost-sharing reductions, which is a way to lower costs for families who are and individuals buying their insurance on the exchange. We have a number of other ideas as well. This morning's news tells us that there's a group of House members, Democrats and Republicans, working on some of these same ideas. At the end of the day, we know we have to come together and do that, and I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to.
Well, New Hampshire's Insurance Commissioner Roger Savini said last week he's very worried about this market failure and so forth, and the state has to act soon. And he talked about this sort of high-risk pool that you're talking about, Senator Hassan. $45 million, New Hampshire insurers would pay in some, most, with a little federal money. But the legislature seemed uncertain about this idea, uncertain if this was really the right way to go.
Well, I certainly support Commissioner Savini's efforts here. Commissioner Savini has long experience, having now worked, I think, for this will be his fourth governor, if I'm correct. I think it's really important that legislators listen here. The things that folks from both the healthcare industry and the insurance industry tell us is that one of the ways we really could stabilize things is creating a reinsurance mechanism. So I'm supportive of the commissioner's plan here, and I hope that the legislature will take a very close look at it, ask questions for sure. But there are other examples in other states of these reinsurance pools working well.
So how does that work, Senator Hassan? So is that like public money that goes into a pool that helps insurance companies cover high-risk individuals? Is that how it works?
Yes, that's one of the plans in place. And in fact, there is a bill that one of my colleagues in the Senate has put forward that does just exactly that. I've joined, I think it's Senator Kaine, I've joined as a co-sponsor on that bill.
What about increasing subsidies to individuals under the exchanges, as I know you know, on the Affordable Care Act? Okay, if prices go up, your subsidy goes up, so you can still afford it.
Well, one of the things that we're also proposing is that we really address that income cliff that people currently face. You know, you can only earn up to a certain amount of money in order to get, for instance, advanced premium tax credits. And I think we should be not pegging this to your income, but pegging it to the percentage of your salary that your health insurance premium is. And that's a bill that we also have pending in the Senate that I've co-sponsored. And I think it would start that very discussion that you're talking about.
Well, and then on the flip side of that, though, you know, increasing the subsidies either to individuals or to insurers, how does that help with the bigger issue, Senator Hassan, of holding down the cost of care? I mean, I'm sure you've heard the argument that if the government continues to bolster subsidies, you know, bolster insurers, providers have no incentive to hold their costs down. That's sort of the elephant in the room.
There is no doubt that health care is too expensive and that we have to reduce costs. The thing that insurers would tell you is the biggest cost driver now is the cost of prescription drugs. And this is something I hear all over the state of New Hampshire from people of all walks of life. We've proposed allowing Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices, given their volume.
That
would help us bring costs down. I also support the importation of safe and affordable prescription drugs from places like Canada, and I'm on a bill that would allow us to do that. And I think going forward, that's going to be critically important. Insurance providers are also telling us that the instability in decision-making in Washington and some of the actions of the Trump administration is also driving the cost of premiums up. But we all know we have to come together and make the healthcare system less costly, bend that cost curve. That's something that we need to do together, but it starts with making sure everybody has access to primary and preventive care, too, so that they're not showing up in emergency rooms in crisis, which is not only bad for their health, but also very expensive.
Let's talk specifically, Senator Hassan, about the role of the congressional delegation. So you, Senator Shaheen, and Congresswomen Custer and Shea Porter. Governor Sununu said last week he wants to see, in his words, less complaining and more doing from you and the rest of the delegation. Let's hear a little bit of that.
You look, I've been down there putting out letters, putting out ideas for the administration. I stood up strong, even against my own party, and said this health care plan that they're proposing isn't right. We need more flexibility. We need CSRs. We're putting real ideas on the table. I don't hear anything from our federal delegation other than Obamacare's fine. We had our own insurance commissioner stand up yesterday and say it is on the verge of collapse. Right? So when your healthcare system is on the verge of collapse, you got to put forth real ideas to keep it sustainable for people in the long term.
So what is your role as a senator representing New Hampshire and as a Democrat with, you know, an all-Republican House, all-Republican Senate, Republican president to improve the situation? You know, what sort of ideas can you put forward and what sort of ideas get listened to?
Well, I'm a little disappointed in what I just heard from Governor Sununu because, of course, it is Senator Shaheen who put forward a bill to do exactly what he just said, which was ensure that the cost sharing reductions continue. So she was on the floor of the Senate. I know there was press about it, and I'm sure that Governor Sununu and his staff can find a record of that. We have put forward multiple bills. We have sent letters offering to work with the other side, the Republican senators, about ways to improve the Affordable Care Act. And as Governor Sununu knows, because he and I have talked about it, I don't think any of our delegation believes that the Affordable Care Act doesn't need improvements.
What are the bipartisan ideas that you and Senator Shaheen have been working on with the other side? Are there places where people can say, yeah, all right, let's do this?
Well, I think now we'll begin, I hope, to see that kind of discussion. I'm a member of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, otherwise known as the HELP Committee. We've been asking to have hearings on ways to improve the Affordable Care Act since I became a senator. Unfortunately, the day after we took our oaths of office, we were informed by a letter from the Republican majority that they wanted to do health care only through this reconciliation process, only with Republican votes. So now that we've reached this point where their latest attempt to do that has not been successful, we are hopeful that they will sit down with us at the table to explore some of these ideas, like a reinsurance pool, like putting cost-sharing reductions into law, like addressing the income cliff, like lowering the cost of prescription drugs. There are, I think, a lot of ideas out there. One of the ideas that Senator McCaskill had in the middle of this debate, when people were pointing out that there are counties in this country where there aren't any insurers on the exchange, she offered up a bill that said any citizen in the United States could buy, any citizen in one of those counties could buy the same insurance that Congress and members of congressional staff buy. So a way to make sure that people had access to a national plan, which all of us and our staffs can buy into. And so we've put forward a lot of ideas. Now we're hoping that the other side comes to the table and we can really explore them together.
Do they have any ideas that you think, oh, I could get on board with that?
Well, we began a discussion. You know, a group of us who are former governors in the Senate actually sat down with former governors of both parties.
Joe Manchin convened that, and
it was a very preliminary discussion. But what we were trying to do is get a sense of each other's concerns about the health care system and how we thought we might proceed. And I'm hoping that we can continue those kinds of discussions.
I want to ask you a little bit more about bipartisanship, for sure, Senator Hassan. But a bunch of emails came in over the weekend about health care. So I want to share a couple of them with you, please. And Don in Hanover says, please ask Senator Hassan why she doesn't support single-payer Medicare for all. Don says political expediency is not an adequate answer. And I just want to let you know, Senator Hassan, that Fred in Canterbury also talked about Medicare for all. Chloe sent about email about single-payer health care, along with Mimi in Dover. So lots of listeners who want to know about single-payer and how you feel about that.
Well, I don't think there is a receptive group of senators on the other side of the aisle to the notion of single-payer health care. So I don't think it's something that is going to happen. And I think right now we have a system that has been – there are parts of the Affordable Care Act. There are states where it's working pretty well but still needs some improvements. There are states where it's obviously not working well. And I think all of us want to focus on stabilizing what we have right now. And there are legitimate concerns about what the upfront cost of transitioning to single payer would be.
So how do you feel about it if, you know, if you could just – wave your magic wand. I think
I don't have a magic wand. What I have is a vote in the United States Senate and a group of colleagues in the United States Senate in a Senate that is almost evenly split, who need to come together and find a way to stabilize what we have, make sure people are getting access to insurance plans, you know, robust insurance plans that cover care and that they can afford. And that requires that we stabilize what we have and really focus on lowering the cost of prescription drugs in particular, as well as lowering the overall cost of health care. Because regardless of who and how we cover health care, if we can't bring those costs down, we're going to continue to have a very fractured and difficult debate. And we're going to continue to have people who can't get the care they need.
So Bernie Sanders, as you know, ran on a Medicare for all platform, was very popular, did very well here in New Hampshire. A lot of people latched onto that. So I'm just wondering what you make, Senator Hassan, of this group of people who support single-payer health care. It seems like it's a pretty large group on the left.
I understand why people support the idea. I'm always happy to hear them out on it. But what I know right now is that there are people who are challenged with skyrocketing premiums, high prescription drug costs, and places in our country where people don't have access to coverage on the exchange. And what we need to be focusing on right now is stabilizing what we have and moving forward. And again, looking at the overall cost of healthcare, because regardless of how we pay for it, if the costs keep going up, we are going to be deeply challenged.
Fred asks about specifically this expanded and improved Medicare for All Act coming before the Senate. Are you aware of when and how that might come before the Senate, Senator Hassan?
I don't know the particulars. I obviously, when it gets proposed, I will look at it very closely.
Okay, thanks everybody for those emails. And you can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. It's NHPR Exchange. Or you can give us a call. It's your chance to talk to U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. I want to talk, Senator Hassan, please, a little bit more about bipartisanship. You mentioned some of the ideas that you're talking to Republicans about in terms of health care. And in your campaign for U.S. Senate, you talked about bipartisanship a lot, saying, hey, that's how it's done in New Hampshire. Who have you worked with on the other side, Senator Hassan, and on what issues?
Oh, thanks for the question. I am working right now with Senator Portman on a hack Homeland Security bill, which is a bill that creates what's called a bug bounty program in the Department of Homeland Security. We know cybersecurity is such a major issue. And in the Pentagon, one of the things they've done is vet really smart computer hackers to make sure that, you know, they're doing this for the right reasons, but then offer them a small bounty if they can break into the computer systems of the Pentagon and then help us, you know, improve and close those holes,
so
right?
You're paying 17-year-old boys to sit in their basement.
Because what we know is it's going to be very hard for us to get the kind of talented computer experts to actually come to work full-time for the federal government, right? But we do know that we have vulnerabilities out there. So Senator Portman and I have proposed doing the same thing at Homeland Security that they've done at Pentagon. The folks at Homeland Security have been generally supportive. I'm hoping that that bill will get voted out of our committee, the Homeland Security Committee, in September. That's an example. I'm working also with Senator Portman and a bipartisan group on the STOP Act, which is really aimed at cracking down on fentanyl entering this country from places like China. So that's a bipartisan bill. There's lots of bipartisan efforts around the opioid crisis, something that is affecting, obviously, New Hampshire. I still continue to hear about it everywhere I go. It's hurting people from all walks of life. It's an epidemic that grew over years, and it's going to take us time to really turn the tide. But there is a lot of bipartisan attention on that, something called the SALTS Act, which is focused on that. And with Senator Manchin, I'm on something called the Lifeboat Act, which would create a revenue stream to help fund treatment for the opioid crisis. So those are some of the things. I'm on a couple of bills around workforce development, something I hear about from businesses all the time, and was a big issue that I worked on as governor. I want to continue to work on that. And so I'm on a couple of bills that make Pell Grants more available to people who are, for instance, in apprenticeships and strengthen our CTE programs in the country. So those are just some of the examples. And then, like, on the issue of foreign policy, I was proud to join almost all of the other senators on the Russian sanctions bills, which also includes additional sanctions against Iran and now with House action against North Korea. So there is a lot of activity in which you see bipartisanship. We had a bipartisan reauthorization of the FAA, and as part of that reauthorization, a bill I worked on called the Tickets Act, which provides more consumer rights for people flying, airline customers, was included in that. So, and on the FDA reauthorization, I worked with Senator Young, another freshman senator, Republican, on making sure that doctors and other prescribers know that opioids that are referred to as abuse deterrent opioids actually aren't less addictive. So there's a lot of bipartisan activity going on, and I've been really buoyed by the degree to which people are reaching across the aisle.
Okay, a couple threads to pick up after a short break, Senator Hassan, including North Korea, again, with some pretty scary news over the weekend. I also want to ask you, obviously, more about opioids and some of the federal funding. And also, Senator Hassan, after a break, we'll talk about troubles at the VA Medical Center in Manchester. So all that coming up and your questions as well, 1-800-892-6477.
This week on the 10-Minute Writer's Workshop, author Michael Cunningham has advice we can all take to heart, no matter what you do.
You have to figure out when it's time to just let it go, when this is all you can do. Over the years, I have developed a slightly better sense of when I've reached that point, when in rewriting, I'm not making it better, but I'm just making it different.
Subscribe to the podcast for sage advice or find some at nhpr.org/10mww.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan about some of the big national news, including the failed Senate health care repeal effort, also the Manchester Veterans Administration Medical Center, and some news out of North Korea that has caused concern over the weekend. And of course, we're taking your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Senator Hassan, you mentioned you were on the Homeland Security Committee. And as I'm sure you know, this weekend, North Korea tested another intercontinental missile that appears possibly to have the range to hit U.S. cities on the West Coast and beyond. What does this mean for Homeland Security, Senator Hassan? It's pretty scary.
Well, certainly it's very concerning. And one of the things we really need to see from the administration is steady and strategic leadership. And they need to develop a comprehensive and clear strategy with North Korea. We need to be putting pressure on China, which has many more economic levers with regard to North Korea than most of the rest of the world certainly does. And we need to be continuing to talk with our South Korean allies about their approach to this. But it is very, very concerning. And it really is important that the administration, again, be clear about what they're doing, develop a comprehensive strategy, and be steady here.
Well, speaking of Homeland Security and a steady hand, there's a new White House Chief of Staff, General John Kelly, deep credentials in the military. He was the head of Homeland Security until just recently. And as you know, he's been bumped up to the new White House Chief of Staff. Given your position on the Homeland Security Committee, Senator Hassan, what are your observations about General Kelly and how effective he might be, whether he'll provide that steady hand?
Well, first of all, General Kelly has served his country with incredible distinction. I was one of his supporters for his nomination to be Secretary of Homeland Security. I heard really strong recommendations about him from members of the military, including people in the New Hampshire National Guard who had worked with him. And so I feel very strongly that he had the credentials to run Homeland Security, as well as the credentials to serve as the president's chief of staff. I am concerned that he's been on duty at Homeland Security now for only about 7 months. And just as this agency, which is still relatively new for a federal agency, just as he and the agency were kind of getting up to speed together, he's now going off to work at the White House. And I'll observe that in President Obama's administration, there were two secretaries of Homeland Security in 8 years, and now we're going to have two secretaries of Homeland Security in the Trump administration in 8 months. And that does concern me. But, you know, we all have to come together and do our best to support the men and women working at the Department of Homeland Security, as well as support people who are trying to serve this administration.
It sounds like you appreciated his talents at Homeland Security and are a little sorry to see him go.
Yeah. And look, Homeland Security has some real challenges, and there were concerns about some of what some of us felt was a disconnect between some of the policies stated by leadership at Homeland Security and what was happening on the ground. So I am concerned about a vacuum of leadership there, and I am hoping for a new nominee for Secretary of Homeland Security as quickly as possible.
Well, speaking of goings-on at the White House, got a Facebook comment from Emma, who says, Senator Hassan, what is the Senate doing to ensure that the White House cannot interfere with Mueller's inquiry? Are there measures being considered to keep his investigation independent from outside influence? What if Trump fires him? What are you prepared to do in that case? Emma, thank you for the comment.
Well, Emma, thank you very much for the comment. This is of great concern to all of us. It is absolutely clear from consensus by our national security agencies that Russia interfered with our elections in 2016. It's really important that we get to the bottom of whether there were potential connections between these efforts and President Trump's associates. And we really have to get to the bottom of whether President Trump attempted to obstruct justice or did obstruct justice with his firing of Director Comey. So Director Special Prosecutor Mueller absolutely has to have independence. There are some folks working on legislation in the Senate to make sure that he does continue to have that independence and to protect him from attempts by this president to fire him. And I will look at all of that legislation very clearly, because this is critical to our constitutional system of government. And we have to make sure that Mr. Mueller has the resources and the time to get to the bottom of what happened.
So there's a bill in the Senate to protect Mr. Mueller.
Bipartisan
bill?
My understanding is that at least a couple of senators have been working on legislation. Whether it's been introduced yet, I do not know. But I think you saw comments from people like Senator Graham over the weekend that indicates that there may be bipartisan interest in making sure that Mr. Mueller maintains his independence and is insulated from attempts of political interference by the White House.
Okay, Emma, thank you for raising the point. And you can give us a call if you'd like. Talk with U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan. The number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or respond on Facebook like Emma did. It's NHPR Exchange. Senator Hassan, a moment ago, you mentioned New Hampshire's opioid crisis, and I did want to ask you a couple more questions about that, please. This has reached the point where it's national news. You know, Time Magazine, The New York Times, ABC's 2020 did a whole special on this. Front page coverage about New Hampshire's opioid crisis. How do you feel about this kind of attention and what it might do for the New Hampshire brand?
What I am focused on and what I hear about from people all over our state is how we do everything we can from all walks of life to combat the opioid epidemic that we have, turn the tide on it, and help people get well. This is an illness. We didn't get here overnight. There are lots of different factors that helped create this crisis. We're not the only state suffering in this way. But we have to take this on from both the demand side and the supply side. That means we have to work with physicians, physician educators. We have to work with the treatment community. We have to increase our treatment capacity. And there are things about substance use disorder that I think it's fair to say we don't fully understand. And so there have been a group of us meeting with scientific experts around both pain management as well as addiction to try to make sure that our policies are aligning with the best scientific information. But at the end of the day, what we know more than anything is that we need to continue to strengthen and make accessible to everybody an integrated healthcare system. We know that people begin misusing things like opioids often because they have other underlying health conditions, whether it's behavioral health or whether it's a workplace injury. We know that we have to continue to strengthen our overall healthcare system and include treatment both as an essential benefit in private insurance plans so that insurance companies have to cover it, as well as continuing our Medicaid expansion program and making it a treatment available in traditional Medicaid as well. That's what providers have told us is their number one tool.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about substance abuse treatment. And there has been money flowing from the state and the federal government to combat opioid addiction. A lot of people say, hey, that's great. How confident are you, though, Senator Hassan, that the federal and state money going to treatment now is being used properly, that there's enough oversight of some of these organizations, you know, setting up shop as treatment and prevention specialists? Because there's been some coverage about, right, you know, anybody setting out a shingle.
So what's really important is that the scientists tell us that medication-assisted treatment is still considered state-of-the-art treatment, and that obviously takes a level of credentials and expertise, and we need to make sure that we are allowing physicians to increase the numbers of people they treat and other healthcare providers so that we can increase our capacity. There's also a younger and perhaps by scientists less well understood prevention and recovery movement, and we know we have to find ways to measure the outcomes of those efforts. And so I think it's really important, and I am very, very grateful to all the people in our state and around the country who are in recovery, who have stepped forward and helped to develop these kind of recovery centers and helped provide peer support to people who are struggling with addiction. We have a ways to go in understanding how that works, but we also know it makes a real difference. And I think as we are grappling with this epidemic and trying to make sure we are using every resource at our disposal to help people get well and stay well. This is a chronic illness, and we know that if people don't have supports, whether it's peer support or medical treatment support in an ongoing way, they are very likely to relapse. And so some of these efforts are new. We do need to develop ways of measuring their effectiveness. But right now, I'm just incredibly grateful for all the people who stepped forward to talk about their own experience, to say that they suffer from substance use disorder or they lost a loved one who overdosed as a result and have been willing to lend a helping hand, because right now we need all hands on deck.
Sure. And we've heard those stories and they're incredible. And there are a lot of amazing people who are in recovery who are working on this issue. But it's tricky, isn't it, Senator Hassan, because you want some oversight to know that it isn't just, you know, anybody saying, hey, I can treat you. On the other hand, if you have too much regulation and oversight, you might not get some of these innovative approaches.
It's always a balance. And that's what we always have to be working to do. We want appropriate oversight. We also want to incentivize innovation. And so that's a balancing act. We do it in many other areas, and I'm sure we can do it here.
Well, Stat News and the Boston Globe recently reported, quote, drug users are pawns in a sprawling national network of insurance fraud, being sent to treatment centers hundreds of miles from home for expensive but shoddy care. NHPR has reported that there's not much state oversight of places that call themselves sober living. Sometimes it's sober, sometimes it isn't. So I just wonder again about those federal dollars that you and others work so hard to bring to the state are being used properly.
Well, and we need to make sure they are, and we'll continue to exercise oversight there. And I'm always, if people have concerns about a New Hampshire-based center or operation, they should certainly reach out to let us know.
I want to turn, Senator Hassan, to troubles at the Manchester VA Medical Center. And Veterans Affairs Secretary Shulkin is coming to New Hampshire this week after he dismissed two top leaders at the Veterans Medical Center. Launched an investigation. I know you know all this. A couple questions, though. How surprised were you first by the Boston Globe report revealing substandard care at the Manchester VA?
Well, the report is very, very concerning. I was outraged by what I read. Look, our veterans sacrificed for us. We are free. We are doing what we love to do because of the sacrifices our veterans made, and they deserve the absolute best quality of care possible. So to read the Boston Spotlight article was, you know, I was outraged both at the allegations of lack of quality care, poor conditions, but also what appeared to be administrative indifference to concerns raised by the whistleblowers. So I am eager. You know, I've talked with Secretary Shulkin. He is coming up here and we'll meet with the delegation and with the whistleblowers. I think that's really, really important. The delegation has written him a letter. We sent it about 10 days ago outlining a number of questions that we think need to be answered. He has indicated that there will be an external medical review, but we want to make sure that we need more details about the nature of that external review. And we've asked questions about what kind of operational reviews there will be as well. And I think it's really, really important that the reviews be independent and that they look fully, especially at the allegations of poor quality of care for spinal patients.
Well, that's the issue that some of the doctors have raised, that this review that the VA is doing is still too internally focused, that yes, there's going to be external looks at it, but it will actually be conducted internally. So you're saying you're going to talk to Secretary Shulkin about that?
We have been pushing to get details from Secretary Shulkin and his staff about how they plan to structure this medical review. And I think it's going to be important that it be independent, and we will be pushing for that.
During your time as governor, Senator Hassan, were you aware of problems at the VA or hints of problems?
We were not aware of this level of concern. We obviously heard while I was governor and continue to hear concerns about the Veterans Choice Program and individual case-by-case concerns, but had not heard from these whistleblowers. And, I'm glad that the whistleblowers have spoken up. And again, I'm looking forward to this meeting with Secretary Shulkin. You asked me earlier about some of the bipartisan efforts that exist in the Senate, and one of them is around veterans. There's a bill that we actually passed on a bipartisan way to modernize the appeals process for our veterans within the VA system. Again, that was a bipartisan bill. We all want to support our veterans. They deserve the very best this country has to offer because they gave us their very best.
In January of this year, you visited the center. You said it's playing an important role in serving veterans. And you said you'd be working to ensure resources are appropriately distributed to provide better care. The doctors who blew the whistle at the VA said resources were part of the problem. Right. So can you just connect the dots for us there?
Sure. I mean, as I understand the whistleblowers' concerns, and my office has met with the whistleblowers, and I look forward to doing that shortly. There are concerns that a lack of resources created some incentives by the VA to push people into other care, and we're going to look at that very closely. Look, we need to have sufficient robust resources to take care of our veterans, and I will join my colleagues in our delegation, as we all have been, fighting for those resources.
Well, here's an email from Paul who says, with our complete congressional delegation vowing to treat veterans better during their campaigns, why is it that New Hampshire is the only state in the contiguous U.S. not to have a full-service VA hospital? Paul, thank you for the email. And he's right, isn't he, Senator Hassan? It's a VA medical center, not a full-scale hospital.
That is correct. And that's one of the reasons. That was a decision that was made some time ago, something that I spoke out against when I was in the state Senate. I spoke out against as governor, and I know other members of our delegation have as well. It's also one of the reasons that our delegation, before I was in the Senate, pushed for the Veterans Choice Program so that veterans could seek medical care in New Hampshire rather than having to go down to Boston, for instance. White River Junction is available to them, and so for veterans in the western part of the state, that may be a very reasonable option. But for veterans in other parts of the state, having to go all the way down to Boston or all the way over to Vermont seemed inappropriate to many of us. But it does raise the question, which I have actually discussed with Secretary Shulkin, which is, why are we the only state in the contiguous U.S. without a full-service VA hospital?
Well, it is odd because from what I understand, we have a high percentage of veterans.
Yeah, we do.
Higher than average in this state, so it's hard to understand.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul, for that email. A lot more of your emails, questions, comments in just a moment. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Democratic U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan is with us, and we're hearing from you. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Senator Hassan, let's go right back to our listeners. And Julie is calling from Concord. Hi, Julie. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, I'm calling from a speakerphone in my car. I'm in a parking lot. But I had called last week when you had a panelist discussing the VA crisis. And my husband was a Vietnam veteran. He had a quadruple bypass in West Roxbury VA Hospital. But his primary care, because we live in Concord, was in Manchester. And he was supposed to have a six-week follow-up from his research study to make it more efficient in the future for veterans. And that follow-up never happened, and he died 2 weeks later. So I just wanted to put that out there and see what the senator had to add to that or to comment about that.
Sure. And Julie, I remember your call from last week. And again, I'm very sorry for the loss of your husband. I think you told me he was not, you know, he was just in early middle age. So, Tough story. And, you know, she talked about he was supposed to have a six-week follow-up, Senator Hassan, and it didn't happen. And then he died. And, you know, when you hear about people waiting, you think, okay, well, it's a little inconvenient. Well, sometimes it's a lot more than inconvenient.
So first of all, Julie, I am so sorry for your loss, and I am so grateful for your husband's service to our country and for your support of him. Service is a family affair. And I just can't tell you how sorry I am. I also will take to heart the question you're raising, which is, why didn't the six-week follow-up happen? And I would be happy to connect directly with you through my office so that we can get the specifics of this situation and do everything we can to find out what happened. To the broader issue, access to healthcare in a timely way makes a real, real difference. And so I am so sorry that, one, the follow-up didn't happen, and two, that not only are you coping with your husband's death, but you're also coping with the question of what if, and what if that follow-up had happened. So we will, if you want to coordinate through the staff here at The Exchange so my office can connect with you, we would like to follow up with you very, very much. And again, I'm grateful for your husband's service, for yours, and for your willingness to share this concern and story with us so we can do everything we can to make sure it doesn't happen to someone else.
Well, thank you again, Julie, very much for sharing your story. You can join us as well. Exchange at nhpr.org is the email. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Steve in Exeter that just came in. How would Senator Hassan compare threats to our homeland from refugees versus foreigners entering the United States in other ways, like the visa waiver program and tourist and student visas? Steve, this is a great question. We should definitely cover this. What do you think, Senator Hassan?
We have to be constantly vigilant to protect our homeland. That means securing all of our borders, not just the southern border, but our maritime border, our northern border as well. And that's something I'm committed to doing. Certainly, we also have to be strengthening our visa entry programs and our vetting of refugees. One of the things that Senator Shaheen has been particularly active in is making sure that we are doing much more vetting of social media than we used to do. But we also can't ignore the fact that we have concerns about homegrown terrorism, too. And that's something that we've had hearings on in Homeland Security. We have heard from a number of people on the front lines in our communities around the country about the importance of working with communities, especially perhaps communities of immigrants, to make sure that we understand immigrants and refugees, to make sure that we are understanding each other and rooting out
potential cases of homegrown terrorism wherever we can. And that requires community engagement and involvement. And that's something we've been taking testimony about in our Homeland Security hearings so that we can improve in that regard, too.
You know, Steve asks about the difference between refugees versus, as he says, foreigners entering the U.S. in other ways. When this refugee pause was first proposed, I think, gosh, it was while you were still governor, I think, there was this idea that, you know, should we put a pause on refugees? Are they properly vetted? A lot of people told us that refugees are the most heavily vetted folks who come into this country. I just wonder what you think, Senator Hassan, about the vetting we give refugees, whether that should be increased or whether we really should focus on these other areas that Steve mentions, you know, tourist visas, student visas, and so forth.
Well, look, we have to strengthen our vetting throughout our system, and we always have to be working to do that while also living up to our American values. And, you know, now that we have engaged with Assad in Syria, for instance, I think we have to be making sure that we are doing our part to address the humanitarian crisis, and that means with a strong vetting program, accepting Syrian refugees here.
Another email came in earlier from Seth in Dover, and this is completely switching gears, but it is a topic I did want to ask you about, Senator Hassan. Seth says, Democrats once again have had their tukus properly kicked in an election, but I continue to hear Democratic leaders talking about the strength of their party. With consistent low voter turnout in almost every statehouse in Republican hands, Seth says, why is the party not more focused on overhauling their platform to win votes and hearts? Why isn't there a greater push toward the Democratic socialist policies that millions of Democrats voted for in the primary? Seth, thank you for the email. We touched on this earlier, you know, the idea that Bernie Sanders supported Medicare for all. Seth seems to be saying more broadly, why aren't Democrats taking this more left-leaning posture that was so popular in the primary?
Well, first of all, I'm as disappointed with the outcome of the election as many Democrats are, although I will point out that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. I think it's really important that we continue to focus on the people we represent. I take my lead and inspiration from the people of the Granite State who solve problems each and every day in their businesses, their families, their communities. They do it without regard to partisanship. They do it by looking at what's happening on the ground and solving problems. And one of the things that I hope I bring to the United States Senate, where I am so privileged to serve the people of this state, is my experience as governor, which is looking at policies and how they actually work when you implement them in your home state, in your home communities. I think what you see is Democrats really focused on strengthening the middle class, helping to support innovative businesses, and making sure our state and our country are free and strong and secure. That's what I will continue to focus on. There are lots of different ways to get there. But, you know, one of the things that there's, again, bipartisan focus on is workforce development. And I think there's Democratic focus on that, too. We know that our economy is changing. We know that there are good paying jobs that are going unfilled because people don't have the right skills. I'm on a couple of bills that would help address that. They're bipartisan bills. I also, my first bill as a United States Senator is called the ROI Act, Reigniting Opportunity for Innovators, which would provide student debt relief to people who start businesses or for people who work for them, because we know that there's been a drop off in entrepreneurship because people are graduating from college with immense amounts of student debt that really constrain them.
I did not know that, actually, and so, that there's been a drop off in entrepreneurship.
Yeah, there has been. And so and student debt, for instance, is one of those issues that I hear about over and over again. People are working so hard to put food on the table and then to cover the expenses that are critical to support a strong middle class life, which is the cost of health care, child care, education, housing. Those are all things that Democrats want to focus on and help strengthen our economy while keeping our country safe. And I think you will hear all Democrats talking about those things and focused on how we solve problems together to strengthen the middle class and support innovative businesses so we can all thrive together and move forward.
Well, Seth, I'm glad you sent the email because I did want to ask you, Senator Hassan, about the Democrats Democratic Party's recently released Better Deal, that's their name for it. In his presentation, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said, quote, "We've already proposed creating jobs with a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, increasing workers' incomes by lifting the minimum wage to $15, and lowering household costs by providing paid family and sick leave." Do you support those three aims, Senator Hassan? A trillion in infrastructure, a $15 minimum wage, and paid family leave. Are you on board with those?
Well, certainly. I think the platform that Senator Schumer and other leaders from the Democratic Party put out really reflects our focus on strengthening middle-class families and creating jobs in this country while keeping us safe and secure. I think it's important that we look at each proposal as they would affect each individual state. As you know, I supported strengthening infrastructure in New Hampshire, and we came together and found a way to do that in New Hampshire, a bipartisan bill that provided revenues and resources so we could complete, for instance, the expansion of I-93. I think it's really important that people who work full-time don't live in poverty. I'm not sure that $15 an hour is the right level, especially for a state like New Hampshire, which doesn't have an income or a sales tax.
I think you said 12 during the campaign.
And that's right. That seems to me to be a more appropriate level for New Hampshire. But critically, and I think we should be definitely looking at paid family leave. There are a number of different proposals in the United States Senate for that. I also hear about the cost of childcare as well as the cost of higher education and health care. And those are things we have to continue to work to lower the costs on.
Let's take another call, Senator Hassan. And this is Verona in Deering. Go ahead, Verona. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks very much for taking my call. So my question is following up to the vetting for the refugees. This has been an issue on which there's been conflicting statements. You know, previously during the elections, there was a lot of talk of, quote, extreme vetting without any specifics of what that means and what is actually wrong with our vetting program. And then I would also hear that it's a very robust screening. But now Senator Hassan just said that she would want to make sure that is strengthened. So I would like to know what exactly is, what gaps are there in our vetting of refugees, if any? What is it that we need to strengthen, and what is wrong with the program as it currently is?
Well, it's a good question, Verona. And again, we heard from experts, Senator Hassan, that the vetting process for refugees was, you know, 2 years at a minimum and was extremely thorough already.
Certainly it is a It is set up to be a thorough system. One of the things we heard in the winter of 15 from the FBI and the CIA was that they felt that there wasn't the kind of actual documentation that would allow them to actually operationalize the vetting as they were directed to do. Certainly, we know that there are always ways you can strengthen vetting systems. And as I mentioned, to the degree that social media is something that can be examined. And again, for some refugees, they're obviously not using social media. But for others, they, you know, for other people trying to enter the country, especially through the visa entry system, that's a concern. So I think it's important to listen to law enforcement people on the ground about what their concerns are, and they have some, and just try to make sure that we're listening to those and strengthening where we can, because I think there's always room to improve.
I think the point of the call and the email that I read earlier is our focus misplaced given, again, the extremely in-depth refugee vetting process versus the tourist visas, the business visas, the student visas.
I think
you're
presenting a false choice. I think we need to strengthen all of it. I think we need to be as vigilant as we can be to both be secure on our borders and also live up to our American values. And that takes always strengthening and updating our systems, looking where we can improve, while also being committed to the American value and the Granite State value of inclusiveness and doing our part in humanitarian crises. So I don't think the two are mutually exclusive at all. I think we need to be doing all of it.
Here's another email. This is from Gregory, who says, could you speak to the long-term financial health of Social Security and the Medicare system? Gregory says, it is projected these two programs will eat up every $1 of federal revenue by the early 2040s. Are there any efforts to currently seek solutions to this? And Gregory, it's a great question, although I'm not sure about that prediction, Senator Hassan. I don't have the numbers in front of me. That sounds dire, but maybe he's right.
Well, so first of all, I think it's important to start with the principle that Americans pay into these systems over time with the expectation that they're going to be able to retire in dignity and get the benefits that they earn and deserve. And so I think it's really critical to look to strengthen both Social Security and Medicare without cutting back benefits for people who have paid into these systems and plan their lives and their retirement around getting their benefits. Now, there are things we could be doing to strengthen both systems. On Medicare, we could increase savings substantially by allowing Medicare to negotiate for prescription drug prices, for instance. That's one idea out there that a lot of us are pushing hard, and it would have the benefit of not only helping the Medicare program, but also lower the cost of prescription drugs for everybody as well. And with Social Security, one of the things I think we should be looking at is asking the very wealthiest Americans to pay a little bit more into the system to help make it more solvent. And again, that's an idea that a number of us share, and I am hopeful that we'll be able to address moving forward.
Sometimes the response to that second idea you mentioned is then Social Security becomes more like a welfare program, and so it's a less of a sort of you pay in and you get out.
Well, I don't think it's wrong to ask the wealthiest Americans to pay in throughout the year just the way middle class and working folks do.
One last question for you, Senator Hassan. Here we are in the middle of summer. I'm always sorry to see July 31st roll around because it means summer is unwinding. What does the Hassan family do for fun in the summer? What traditions do you have?
Oh, man. Well, we will visit my mom at the beach in another New England state, I have to admit, because that's where her family's had a beach place for a long time. But we also like just to be outside. And I've had the pleasure as a United States Senator of visiting some of the great places in our state, including a bear refuge in Canaan, New Hampshire, where I got to visit with baby bears, which is possibly one of the most special experiences I've had in a long time.
Some cute photos,
yes.
I hope you put up.
Yes.
Senator Hassan, thank you very much for taking time out of your summer to be with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan, a former governor and state senator here in New Hampshire. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.